The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Welcome to Logos Live. My name is Robert Martin and I'm director of the City Bible Forum in Melbourne. I'm your host for the show. Logos is Greek for word or message. Logos Live seeks to engage the Christian message before a live audience at lunchtime in the CBD of Melbourne. And we do have a live audience here today with us for our first show. Are they alive? Yes, there's some clapping and some cheering from our live audience. We also aim to have a bit of fun. Who said exploring the big questions of life shouldn't be enjoyable? Today we're considering, among other things, the theme, no pain, no gain. And to do this, we're going to reflect on a passage of the Bible, and we're also privileged to have someone join us for whom the motto, no pain, no gain, would deeply resonate, Australian cricketer Sarah Elliott. We're going to meet Sarah in just a moment, but before we do this, I'd like to introduce our poet, Cam Semmons. Now, when I was putting together the Logos Live concept, I needed someone to read the Bible, and I was also looking for someone who could provide thoughtful, meaningful entertainment. Now, I looked on Cam Semmons' website, and it says, if you're looking for thoughtful, meaningful entertainment, Cam is your man. Cam is an award-winning poet and performer. He has numerous books and CDs and his poetry published to date. Cam is indeed our man. Now, Cam's going to read a section from the Bible, the message, the Logos, that we're considering today, and then he'll provide his own poetic reflection. Please welcome Cam Semmons.
Thank you. Well, we'll start with the Bible verse, which is 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 to 27. And this is from the Holman Christian Standard Bible. It's not a version I'm familiar with, but apparently Rob's a fan of it. So here it is. I like it too. I've got no problems with it. Don't you know that runners in a stadium all race, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way to win that prize. Now, everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything. However, they do it to receive a crown that will fade away. But we, a crown that will never fade away. Therefore, I do not run like one who runs aimlessly, or box like one beating the air. Instead, I discipline my body and bring it under strict control, so that after preaching to others, I myself will not be disqualified. So I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, what's going to be appropriate for me as a poet to share here today? And I thought I wanted to bring something a bit new and a bit fresh. And I've been thinking a lot about Psalm 23, and I've done a few different versions of Psalm 23 over the years. So I thought I'd do a cricketer's version of Psalm 23, particularly a test match batsman's version of Psalm 23. So here it is. You should recognise some of the lines. They're a bit cricketized, though, of course. So here it is. Bradman is my shepherd. I shall not want a 2020 career. He resteth me in the green pastures of the outfield. He leadeth me to the bottled water at tea break. He restoreth my batting average. He leadeth me in the paths of Ponting, Border and War for the sake of the baggy green. How's that? Even though I wait through the darkness of an LBW appeal, I shall not fear, for the third umpire will support me. My pads and helmet comfort me. He prepares the ashes for me in the face of whinging palms. He anoints my head with Gatorade. That tiny cup will overflow. Surely good wickets and merciful weather shall follow me all the days of my test match career, and I will dwell on the oval of Lords forever, not out. Thank you. Thank you very much. But I was thinking about this concept of winning, you know, so this Bible verse is about, running the race, winning the prize. But, you know, we are often told in our culture, winning is everything. But as a Christian, winning, I think, has a very different definition. You know, when Jesus says something like, you know, the first shall be last, the last shall be first, suddenly, you know, Jesus is thinking a little bit differently than the Australian Institute of Sport. So I was thinking about that and all the little whispers we get, all those little messages that are always thrust upon us. But also I was thinking of that, you know, the Bible describes God as in one moment it says God's voice is not the big booming thunder. It's God's voice is that still small voice. So, anyway, that's my little introduction to this poem that I call In the World of Whispers. There's a serpent in the speakers of my TV, radio, laptop, phone. I can hear its hiss running beneath every show, song, clip, chat. This hiss. A subtle, insistent whisper. Win. Win. Win at all costs. Win or die trying. Buy. Buy that Ab Circle Pro. Buy that Zumba video. Buy that signed jersey of Gary Ablett and you will be like God. Buy. Win. Buy. Win. And I, too late, feel the fangs pierce the thin skin of my will, and I can feel the venom poisoning every choice I make. Win, buy, win, buy. But I lie as still as I can, still listening for that other whisper. That still, small voice. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for that, Cam. And we'd like to introduce our guest today, who may resonate particularly with that first poem about the 23rd Psalm, a very unique rendition of that psalm. Sarah Elliott is an Australian cricketer. She's a right-handed batter who also bowls leg spin. She made her international debut in 2005 and scored a test century in the recent Ashes test against England. She's Australia's first mother to score a test century, and she joins us now. Please welcome Sarah Elliott.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob.
So, Sarah, what were your reflections on Cam's 23rd? Did you feel like you were walking out there at the 23rd Psalm? Have you ever thought about the 23rd Psalm when you're batting?
I think having God rather than Bradman gives me a little bit more confidence, which is good. And the second poem definitely resonated as well with that win-win-win mentality that you get a lot as an elite athlete sportsperson.
Sure. Well, we'll talk about that a bit more in a little while. But we're delighted that you can join us here today. Thank you for coming to our pilot, our very first show of Logos Live. Now, no pain, no gain. That's catchphrase was brought into prominence in the 1980s with Jane Fonda and her workout videos. The concept is that there's no achievement is not without sacrifice. Now, Sarah, you've played Test cricket for Australia. You're in the current Australian Test team. I imagine that there's been some pain along the way in order to reach the elite level. Can you just tell us maybe a little bit about your story, about maybe how you began in cricket, then how you managed to reach the elite level?
Sure, yeah. So I started playing cricket probably like most Aussie kids in the backyard with mum and dad, and I've got a brother and a sister, but really got involved at school, and from there had a little bit of success, so went on and played some state underage competitions, joined a club, and sort of from there progressed my way through the ranks to, like Rob said, to represent Australia. I first represented Australia in 2005, so quite some time ago, but it's definitely been an up and down journey for me. Some selections going my way, some not. So it's sort of a I guess, a fringe player for Australia in lots of ways. What else can I say? No pain, no gain. I guess getting onto that theory, I mean, it's definitely a lot of hard work that goes into it. It's the same with any sport. So sacrifices, I don't think of it in those terms because it's doing something that I love. So it's hard to sort of really say that it's sacrifice. But it's definitely lots of training. So at the minute, training with the Victorian Spirit Squad. We train sort of four times a week as a group all together in at the MCG. And then aside from that, we're expected to probably, depending on the time of the season, that it might be 2 to 3 gym sessions, 2 to 3 running sessions on top of your skills lot. So being a batter and a bowler, you know, that'd be 3 or 4 sessions of each of those a week, and then fielding as well. So it's definitely a big time sacrifice, that's for sure.
Well, we can talk a bit more about what other sacrifices, well, how that works in a second, but... But when you were progressing through the cricketing ranks and so on, when did you think that you could have maybe reached the elite level? Or when you were younger, did you think you were going to play for Australia? Or
It definitely wasn't necessarily something that I thought that I would do. I guess I was lucky enough when I joined the club for the first time, Dandenong Women's Cricket Club. There were some senior players there that played for Australia, and captain of Victoria was there at the time. So I guess that's what really gave me that sort of aspiration to say, hang on, I know these people, these are nice people, I've met them, hang on a minute, maybe I can achieve the same things that they've done. So I was probably about 18 at that time.
Okay. And so when was it that you actually thought, oh, actually, well, I could even potentially play for Australia? Was that...
I'm still thinking that. I think, oh, but I could, I'm sure I could get picked for the next team. I don't think there's a time we ever feel like you've made it secure in that spot. It's sort of that ongoing. So I played for Victoria when I was 18 and played for Australia when I was 23. So I guess it was somewhere in between there that I thought, hang on a minute, I can really do this. If I put my head down, then I can do it. But definitely every year you keep thinking the same thing.
Right. So, as you mentioned before, you outlined some of the requirements that you need to do to sort of at the elite level. You're training several times a week, doing all sorts of different types of things. So, can you just explain a bit more about what you said? So you have to come into the G to do that training with the elite women and so on each week.
Yeah, so that's where our training centre is at the minute, at the MCG. So we all get together. Do our running sessions. Sometimes I think in the back of my head, we're only playing cricket. I'm not trying to run marathons or do that as we head out.
A few cricketers feel like that sometimes, I think, don't they?
What happened to the Boone and the Alan Border era of things? I don't know.
You don't have anyone in your team nicknamed Tubby, do you?
We don't, no.
Well, they're not going to share if they're... So that'd be a very private nickname, I imagine, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's right. so we get together and do the gym programs and the running sessions often around the town or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you're in the gym and also on the field and so on doing skills.
Yep.
And so on as well.
So bat versus ball. Normally we'll have a competition night where it's on for young and old, and then another night will be more skills based where it's just really working on the technical aspects of the batting, bowling and fielding. And then,
And you mentioned before that it's not really so much about sacrifice, it's more because you're doing something that you love. But there's still a sense of dedication that you require, and you need to be focused on doing what you're doing, though. I imagine that there's times throughout your training and career, and you've been playing, obviously, for over 10 years and so on now at a high level. There's obviously a lot of work that needs to be done to get there.
Yeah, that's true. I guess there's lots of times where you think, how better could I be spending these hours that I'm running around, and that ties back into the passage, I'm sure we'll get to it, but is that what God's asking me to do? And like the passage does say, sorry if I'm jumping ahead, when it talks about we're competing for a prize that's going to fade, and, you know, when I am putting in, it's probably up around 15 to 20 hours a week that you're committing to it. That is a big sacrifice, and that cuts into family time, into work time. So I've worked, I'm qualified as a physiotherapist, but I've sort of worked part-time. My work career has very much been what I can fit in around wanting to achieve that playing for Australia and representing Victoria. Mm. So there's sacrifices in that way.
Yeah, I suppose also that you're not a professional athlete, so there's a time factor, is there's a lot of juggling and so on that is required.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. So we're lucky now, women's cricket is growing and doing really well, and the girls now are all on sort of part-time semi-contracts, which is fantastic. If only I was just starting out in the system. But, yeah.
We have mentioned the Bible. Maybe we'll turn to this, the passage that we're looking at. Now, this is from the book of 1 Corinthians. It was written by the Apostle Paul to the church in the ancient city of Corinth. And he talks about the sacrifices of athletes. So there's a line there. Now, everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything. Now, in the ancient world, the image of the athlete was widespread. Corinth is actually an ancient sporting centre in the ancient world. They sponsored this thing called the Isthmian Games, held every 2 years. And the prevailing culture was certainly aware that winning required discipline. So you can resonate, I imagine, with what Paul is saying here about that everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's sort of what we've touched on. You know, you've got to get your body right. It's not just the training that you do, but it's what you're eating, all those sorts of things, the fitness testing that you go through.
So just on the eating, like, I imagine that you can't just eat what you like. Do you have a diet, that you have to follow and so on? Or
yeah, yep. Depending on who you are within the team and what your needs are, then, yeah, you do follow. We've got a dietitian that works with us very closely, giving us the right information about what food to get on board in and around training to maximise the physical capabilities. Again, we're only playing cricket, but...
But does any of those needs involve chocolate cake and so on, or donuts? Is that's not really high on their list?
It's not high on the list, but every now and again it's good to...
Okay. Apparently you've now been described as supermum. I'm not quite sure how you feel about that. The first Australian mother to score a test century. What's required the most discipline, being a mother or playing elite cricket, or trying to do both at once?
I'm not sure discipline's the right word for it.
Dedication. Right. So is one harder than the other, or are they...
They've both got their place, if that makes sense. After a day at home with Sam, especially when he's a little bit grizzly, it's nice to be able to get out and to do something for me. Hit some balls very hard. At the same time, then when I'm at training, and I must admit, over in England, during that Ashes, not so much during the test match, but during the training, the practice matches and the things that you don't count as important, my brain did fade a little bit as I saw Sam around the boundary looking like he was having a lot of fun with my mum and dad. I sort of thought, what on earth am I doing on this side of the boundary? I want to be on the other side. So they're both dedication.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Now, apparently you were back in the gym just 6 weeks after giving birth to your son, Sam. And apparently you'd be back at the gym sooner if the doctor had agreed. I'm not quite sure if that's true or...
I was actually back at the gym at 2 weeks.
That's right.
But I needed to get clearance from the Cricket Australia doctor to return to the playing field. So at 6 weeks after getting clearance, I played my first club game back for Dandenong.
Right, 6 weeks after giving birth. Wow. So now, as an athlete, given the requirements for, you know, dedication and so on, you know, you've got dietitians and so on and training programs, do you feel different to the world around you?
No, not really. I guess it's easy to get lost in that world. I think it's more grounding being in female sport, because the reality is that you still go to work, you still do all the normal things. I think as the sport gets more professional, then I think it's quite easy to get lost and get caught up thinking that you are special or different. And I guess that's no different to being high profile in a job or whatever it might be. But I guess you look at AFL football or the elite male cricketers, where everything sort of gets done for you. I guess I can relate to that. When you're on tour, you're washing your food, everything's done. You're told what time we're meeting here, we're doing this, we're doing that. And so you do feel, I guess in that sense, those times you do feel different and kind of special. Everyone's running around doing stuff for you.
Now here in this passage in 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul's reflecting on the athlete's discipline to make the point that athletes who want to win, they can't actually conform to the world. There is a self-control, a self-denial. Every victory has its price. And in the context, Paul's explaining his own restraint because he doesn't exercise his rights as an apostle in various circumstances. And he's also reflecting on the admonition of idol food, that food that's been sacrificed to idols. Paul said that's not a good thing to do because it means participating in the idol worship of the city, which was in the ancient world, the sporting events were very closely associated with religious festivals and so on as well, so that food was sacrificed to idols was possibly also involved in the sporting events and so on. So he's suggesting that the Corinthians should exercise restraint, similar to the athlete, in order that they could win the prize. And he also then, and this is something we've touched on before, but he speaks about the athlete's reward, which is receiving a crown. And this sacrifice that he speaks about wasn't simply for the sake of sacrifice. He says there that everyone who competes exercises self-control. However, they do it to receive a crown that will fade away, but we a crown that will never fade away. Now, in the ancient world, the key prize was honour. Honour was more important than the crown itself. Sometimes the victor's wreath, I've discovered, was actually made out of celery. I'm not quite sure of how you'd cope with a celery wreath. And so the victor's reward. So Sarah, you've obviously been successful in your sporting career. Are you able to share some of the highlights from your cricketing successes and so on, some things that you feel like are these crowns? That, as I say, sometimes the athletic achievements, they often use the illustration of crowning glory. So are you able to share some of your sporting crowns, perhaps?
I guess some of the highlights, one would definitely be winning a 2020 World Cup over in the West Indies in 2010. The Ashes selection, Test match selection, so getting the baggy green is a massive one. Won a couple of titles for Victoria in the National League competition. Mm-hmm. All those things sort out. I guess it is about that one prize, but it's also about the process and the journey that comes with it. So they're the little steps, you know, when you get the phone call that says, you know what, you're in the team. That's kind of as much as a prize as then ultimately the team going on winning.
How did you react when you got that first phone call to say that you're in the national team?
It was pretty unbelievable. I didn't expect it at all. It was totally out of the blue. So that was really good. And then you balance that with the one that you get a year later that says you're not in the team. And then you get that phone call that says you're back in. So
they actually call you to say that you're not in the team, or they just send you a text?
No, they call the poor person whose job that is. Oh, I don't envy them, but yeah.
Yes, that would be tough. And apparently, I just noticed you've got a very impressive test average at the moment. Like, you're higher than any of the men's cricket team. Like, in fact, I added them up and your average of 65 is more than twice the average of Ed Cowan and Philip Hughes combined. Like, do you go around that, you know, texting that to the men's players and so on?
The men selectors.
That's right.
I think it's lucky we don't quite play as many, so I haven't had as many chances.
Right, okay. But it's still, obviously, it's an achievement to have an average over 60 as a test level, I suppose.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Now, the passage, as we were reflecting on, the passage Paul's making a comparison between the athlete's temporal crown and the eternal. The honour for winning the athletic race is compared with the eternal prize God will award. Now, I don't think Paul's diminishing the value or the achievement that's associated with a temporal prize. They're still worthwhile and worth striving for, but there also needs to be perhaps a sense of perspective. You know, there is a sense that, well, they do fade away. How do you feel about that? What are your reflections on these crowns that fade away in contrast to the crown that will never fade away?
I definitely think it's a big reassurance in lots of ways. You know, even in just talking about the selection and non-selection thing is a pretty good one. I feel very fortunate that I've got a perspective that I'm held by God firmly, if that sort of makes sense. So that helps me to cope with what's going on in this world. You know, if you get dropped, yeah, sure, it's disappointing, but eternally I've got so much more to look forward to. So I often wonder how my teammates, and same in a work context, how people cope in a world that is so up and down and where riches do fade without knowing God as, you know, as Lord and Saviour. So,
So obviously there's a... I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, it has implications for us who working in the city as well. Like, it's not just sporting achievements, but work achievements, things we achieve in life and so on, that big deal, the significant project, maybe even employee of the year, they'll eventually do fade away. And Paul's highlighting the eternal prize that God will award, and that's a race that's certainly worth finishing.
That's right, and I think just thinking through that more, it definitely for me, that line has been a fine one in terms of thinking through. I spoke about how many hours you invest into training for this prize that's going to fade away compared to how much time do I actually invest in eternal riches and in God and my growth in God and those sorts of things. And that's always been a battle that I've sort of had. Is this where God wants me to be? And I think he's gifted me and given me skills and abilities to be where I am and to journey with non-Christians, and he's put me in a unique place, if that sort of makes sense. So, but at the same time, where are my eyes fixed? Are they fixed on that next World Cup win or that next selection, or are they fixed on God and his purposes? And I guess that's the balance, isn't it, about what we put up as idols, whether the thing that we're striving for is more important than God, and where that fits. And I guess that's a battle that everyone has as they live day to day in this world.
So, as you say, like, I'm sure winning the World Cup's not a bad thing in itself. I'm sure you wouldn't mind winning the World Cup, but
great.
So Sarah smiled there for those who can't see. It was a satisfied smile. Yes, that'd be great. But there's saying that there's another race where there's a crown that won't fade away, which is important as well, that we need to consider striving for and so on as well. And one of the key differences between the athletic analogy that Paul's made here and the crown of life is that this eternal crown is a gift, a free gift. Not everyone can represent Australia, but in this race of life, everyone can win. And the reward for finishing is a crown that will never fade away. Now, in the last couple of sentences here that Paul writes in 26 and 27, Paul's saying that the Christian race requires effort. He's saying that like all races, the Christian race requires discipline and sacrifice. It's not necessarily to win the prize, but to keep running straight, keep on the road. He warns that anyone who fails to exercise restraint may be disqualified. It's a warning, actually, against complacency. Hence, Christians must not only... living the Christian life requires effort and the suppression of appetites and longings. So, Sarah, maybe briefly reflect on what would happen if you're playing cricket, but you still have dietitians and so on. What would happen though if you didn't work hard in the gym, do you think, or you didn't listen to the advice of your dietitians and so on? What do you think would happen?
Yes, the simple answer is non-selection or right. No prizes. As basic as it is. But I guess it's that the aimlessly, that word there is really, you can go about things a bit hodgepodge or take a bit of this advice and a bit of that and try and do it, but at the end of the day, it's got to be kind of purposeful when you're training in sport. If you're not intentional or have purpose in the way you go about your training and your playing and your preparation, then the results, inevitably, they don't come. So that's the big one there for me, I think.
I think that's very helpful, actually. The aimlessly, I think that's exactly what Paul's saying. He's trying to say that it's not about... it's actually for seeking focus and purpose and direction and so on, but it's not wandering around aimlessly. And it's like the way the athlete, as you said, if you were aimless in your training, you wouldn't get selected, you wouldn't be able to achieve. And it's similar in the Christian life, that we have purpose, we have a direction, and it does require effort and so on there. So maybe you could share your experience as a Christian believer, not necessarily as a cricketer. Can you comment about the sacrifices or the disciplines of the Christian life that you can reflect on?
Again, it's just about that living with purpose and keeping in mind the perspective that God calls us to have, and that's about spending time with him every day and taking all things to him. Definitely can't sit here and say that I'm necessarily very good at doing it, which is great that God loves us despite our shortcomings, but trying to be purposeful in the way that we relate to God and we spend time with him, and the perspective that that we give to him, particularly, I guess, talking athlete, before games and things like that. Am I here to win the game, or am I here to have fellowship with the people around me? And both are probably equally as important, but making sure there's prayer and there's that sort of thing in preparation for games and life in general. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
But no, I think it does. Yeah, and I think also Paul uses himself here as an example. So he says there, I discipline my body and bring it under strict control. So he's presenting himself as a fighter, battling out as a paradigm and example for the Corinthians and even for us to follow as well. He doesn't swing wildly or aimlessly. He targets himself with, well, he describes it, well-aimed blows to gain self-control. It's not about self-flagellation, but he's suggesting that nothing's going to displace the utmost purpose in his life, which is proclaiming the gospel to others, whatever the personal cost to himself. So Paul is an athlete in this particular race, and he exemplifies this no pain, no gain description. So no pain, no gain. And now I haven't received any questions have come through from the. I haven't received any questions or comments or anything from our audience at this stage. Well, that's okay, Sarah. I can keep talking. I'm happy to. I'm very happy to keep chatting. But we're actually getting close to the end. So no pain, no gain. That's been the topic for today. If anyone does have a question, they could text it through quickly. That's been the topic for today. Is the pain of the Christian walk worth it? Well, what are your reflections on the focus, the discipline, and so on in the Christian walk? Is that worth it for yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just the one little thing, and again relating back to sport, is the freedom that you have to live life when you know that you're secure in God is unbelievable. The freedom to actually live and enjoy life. And I know that's not necessarily what it's all about, but that perspective is pretty fantastic.
I think that's an interesting way of putting it, actually, in terms of the notion of freedom, because to suggest that, as Paul has been suggesting here, that he's actually been putting his body under strict discipline, you'd say, well, that's actually an unfree way to live. But he's actually saying, well, that's actually because we are free that we can be disciplined in what we do, and because we are receiving this prize. Freedom doesn't necessarily mean we have lots and lots of choices. Freedom means that, well, we can elect to say no at different points as well, and we can get there.
And that's, you know, it's true of the stress involved in being an athlete or being a whatever context, work or whatever it might be, but the stress involved in, am I going to make this selection, am I not, I need to do this, people are watching me, all that sort of stuff. But God's given us skills and ability and talents, and so knowing the freedom with which you can walk out and use them because you're bringing glory to God in the way that you do it, that's a very freeing feeling when you go out to play.
Now, I have just received a question that's come through. Unfortunately, it's a slightly humorous question. It's actually directed to me because they've asked me, what's my greatest cricket achievement? Well, I can answer that very simply, is that my highest score... Well, actually, I used to play in Ireland. I played for a little while. I played in a league for old men and people who had never played before. I fitted in really well. I averaged over 50 and I got a number of wickets. It was a great competition because you couldn't get out first ball. You couldn't get it run out. There was no LB. And it was great fun. So I enjoyed my cricket. And they called it Taverner's Cricket. In Ireland. So for our friends who are listening in Ireland, I commend the Malahide Cricket Club where I used to play cricket there. But my highest score in Test cricket was 26. So
fantastic.
Yeah, so there you go.
I used to actually
Sarah.
Play for Leinster in Ireland, right, against Malahide. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, were they the arch rivals? I think they were. Yeah, my wife was a very good cricketer for Malahide. She played in the women's first team and dismissed the Leinster team quite well. Actually, there is a question for you now, Sarah. How do you find the team... relates to other girls? Are they similar age or stage to you? How do you relate to your teammates, I suppose? That's the... I imagine that... Yeah, you...
I feel really fortunate to be amongst a group of girls that are all striving to achieve something, and, you know, we've got very similar interests in terms of that no pain, no gain kind of thing. So there's definitely a mix of... in the last Australian tour that we went away with, the youngest, I think, was 17... And then here I am with my little son tagging along. So I feel really fortunate that I can really connect with those girls of all different ages. Not a whole lot of Christians that I know of around. I feel really fortunate at the club I play with. We've got quite a strong little group, which is fantastic. So I guess in some ways I relate really well to the girls, and in other ways there's big differences in terms of our perspective or life view, if that sort of makes sense. But I feel really privileged I feel like that's where God's placed me, and he's sort of paved the way, and doors keep on opening, and I keep on getting reselected and things like that. So, they're a great group of girls to play with and train with, and the staff and support staff around as well.
That's good. Another quick question related to that. I think it's following on from that. Being a working mum, how did you come to terms with sacrificing so much time for your passion while juggling family, God, work, etc., and so on as well? So how do you... I think you've been described, as I mentioned before, a super mum. I don't know if that's how you feel, or how do you feel juggling all those different things?
It definitely has its challenges. And like I said, there's times when I think, what am I doing? You know, have I got that balance right? And do I still want to be playing, or do I want to be on the other side of the boundary rope, sitting and playing and with my son and watching in? But I feel really fortunate that I can do it. I've got a really supportive family. My husband's really supportive. I am getting paid a little bit to play cricket, so I kind of feel like it is my part-time job. I don't need to work at the minute. And I just use my time really wisely. So I've realised that it's quality when I'm training, not necessarily quantity. I'm still getting my head around that because I'm a numbers person that likes to hit this many balls and bowl that many balls. But, perspective changes, and you just sort of make it work. So far we're going along okay.
So it sounds like you're running not like one who runs aimlessly. You are disciplined and reflective on your time and so on, the way you use your time.
For a price that fades. Makes me wonder.
No pain, no gain. That's been the topic for today. Is the pain of the Christian walk worth it? David B. Morris wrote in The Scientist in 2005, he said, "No pain, no gain is an American modern mini-narrative. It compresses the story of a protagonist who understands that the road to achievement runs only through hardship. The Christian message is one where the prize is of inestimable worth. It's worth the pain. If the athlete disciplines themselves with rigorous training to prepare themselves to win a perishable crown, how much more should we discipline ourselves to win an imperishable crown? In many ways, this describes living the Christian life requires effort and the suppressions of appetites and longings. There is an eternal prize." Please thank Sarah Elliott, our guest today. We'll leave those thoughts with you, and let me leave you with the Logos for the day. Now, everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything. However, they do it to receive a crown that will fade away, but we, a crown that will never fade away. I look forward to joining you next time for the next edition of Logos Live. Thank you.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.